Sometimes I'm paralyzed by my love for him. He calls me from his bed, and I know I'm not supposed to answer because that's the way he learns to go back to sleep on his own. Every night I'm putting him to bed, I say, "Now listen, Kirk, you're getting to be a big boy. You have to learn to go to sleep on your own. Do you understand?" And he says, "Yes, please." And then in the middle of the night he calls, and you know, I can't resist. It's the way he calls. Not sleepy or frightened or crying, but determined and aware and awake. "Mama?" I can hear the question mark so insistent, it's not a question. It would break my heart not to answer. In my heart, he opens the door to this vast terrain of fear. It's a fear stretching out beyond these young years of mine when mortality is supposed to be so inconceivable. And my own mortality is inconceivable until I consider his. How have mothers down through the ages survived their love for their kids? The thought of his mortality is abysmal to me. It came to me one afternoon when we were at the fair down by the lakeside, and a vendor had in captivity one of the owls that have invaded the city ever since the lake first appeared 3 years ago. She was explaining to some other mom's kid how far up in the sky the owl can hear a human heartbeat, and even at that very minute I thought to myself, this owl could hear Kirk's little heart as I stood there holding him in my arms. Could it hear his heart when he was still inside me 3 years ago? Was that my first betrayal of my boy, his birth, exposing him to the peril of owls that hear heartbeats? Every night I wait for the sun to set before writing this. There it goes now, slipping down behind the San Vicente Bridge that crosses the lake to the northwest. I can see it from my window. Sun goes down, sky goes dark, lake goes black, and owls swoop across the rising moon like leaves blown loose from some phantasmagoric tree, twisting up out of the ground. And my voice rises from the crypt of my consciousness, shaking words off like topsoil. Kirk and I are bonded by a cord of blood that runs from his heart to my thighs. Menstrual waves crash against the inner beach of my belly. It first appeared that mid-September after Kirk was born. Of course, it was already there before that, before anyone realized it was ever going to turn into an actual lake. The center, near where Hollywood Boulevard used to meet Laurel Canyon Boulevard. Nothing more than a puddle the morning it first bubbled up. No one thinking anything about it until however long it was before it cut the canyon off from the rest of the city. Not much later, it was almost all the way to Fountain Avenue, which meant it was only a couple of blocks from our old hotel, here at the top of what's now called the St. Jim Peninsula, named after the very fancy hotel up on the strip I can still see from my window. Kirk and I used to sit watching it during the feeding right after he was born, lavender and magenta cleats on the walls and the ether bar where young glam Hollywood drank martinis. But as the lake moved down Sunset Boulevard and overtook it, you could see the Kliegs go out in darkness, move up the hotel floor by floor until it was all dead. The lake was starting to get a lot of attention then, sightseers coming and going, city officials and geological experts standing around scratching their heads. Over the months of that first year, everyone was kind of enchanted by it, however much disruption it caused schedules and traffic and bus lines. That's when the gondolas and rowboats came out, sailing in and out of the red light that poured over the hills like a tide of fire bursting the levee of the sun. Charred palms stitched the horizon. A makeshift harbor was built over by the flooded Chateau X Hotel. Parasols were in fashion that autumn. Women walking the lakeshore with them, twirling them from their boats. So on Saturdays especially, there was this panorama of spinning colored spheres floating above the surface of the lake and in its reflection. Over the last few months, more and more people have moved out of the first floor of our hotel. As the lake gets bigger, the power starts going out in parts of the city. You can tell that the lights of the faraway windows on the other side are lanterns and candles from their pinpoint flickering in the wind off the water, like fireflies hovering against the black hills of the distant shore. Soon the city started rewriting all the addresses. Without over-explaining it here, each new address has two parts, one fixing its place on the lake's perimeter and the other its distance from the lake's center. So as these addresses get bigger, they render the earlier addresses obsolete. LA is a city of drowning addresses.